I'm June Nelson, and I'm the Lutheran Campus Pastor at the University of Wisconsin in Milwaukee. And we're going to spend about an hour looking at the subject, the ordination of women. I have, in the groups that I've been leading this week, had rather lengthy preparations as lead-in to our discussion. But today I didn't come with anything except myself and 10 years in the ordained ministry as a woman, being one of the first to be ordained in the LCA. And I suspect that you're here because you have an interest in this topic, and I'd really like to just begin right off with why you came this morning and why the ordination of women is of particular concern. Well, it's of concern to all of us in the church, but why you particularly wanted to explore this subject. And if there's any way that I can be a live resource, I'm here. So why don't we just open it up and see where your areas of interest are about ordination of women. Any brave hands coming out here? Yeah.
I'm just curious to see how it's going. I've been up here this winter, and Karen Johnson was here, and I went out to a group of women who are studying to be ordained, and she's talked with lots of people that are either in the process or have been ordained, and they aren't getting calls very fast, and I wonder what you think about that.
Is there anybody here who has a woman pastor in your congregation?
I am a woman pastor.
You are? And are you serving?
Yes, I'm the sole pastor of the congregation.
Where?
In Los Angeles.
Uh-huh. And did you have difficulty getting the call?
Yes.
Can you tell us a little about how that process went?
Women have to wait longer. I mean, calls are scarce for everyone anyway, but women have to wait a great deal longer. Women have a difficulty getting interviews, which is, of course, the major. It seems to me that if you're going to get a job, you have to get interviews, and it seems to me you need somebody to advocate your interview that you in fact get them, even to the extent that a bishop might say, "I want you to interview this woman." I mean, without saying you must hire a woman, congregations will automatically skip over names that are women's names.
Yeah.
And I would
by
say
your
most
initials.
Yeah. Well, no, you know, it's all there. And very often I have colleagues that have women's sisters who have been on interviews and have been quite sure that they were accepted and the interview went well and that they were probably the best qualified for the job, and then they were skipped over for a man. So there's still a great deal of resistance in the congregations. I would say I waited 9 months for a call. I have a couple of female colleagues that have waited longer than that. And then usually those calls are to very much smaller congregations than men would accept at less pay.
Is it less pay because you're a woman, or is it less pay because it's a smaller congregation?
Well, let's say that it probably is less pay because it's a smaller congregation, but men won't even interview for that job. And those are the ones that the bishop do find you interviews for. Yes, you know. However that works, the women end up with smaller, difficult congregations. Or assistants. I mean, I think that probably men have this experience too, that very often they'll, if they have a congregation that in which they're an assistant, they don't get the kind of job that description that allows them to do ministry. They do things that the senior pastor doesn't want to do.
A couple of impressions. I finished Luther Northwestern in 79. I mean this in the positive, most positive sense. It's a pioneer time in the church. And pioneer times in particular are tough, particularly for the pioneers. I don't justify or excuse anything. One of the feelings that I have, on the other hand, from the church itself, is that in some ways, I have the impression that we moved so rapidly, and therefore, with incoming women, had no possibility of placing those numbers of women. In some ways, I feel the church has done a disservice in this kind of pioneer stage. On the other hand, someone explained to me that even in regard to men at a seminary does not guarantee you a call. A seminary is there to guarantee you a theological education. Now, I just had that told to me here about 2 months ago out of DSMA. Somebody mentioned that to me. It was a whole new thought to me. So just a couple of little thoughts.
What do you think is the source of the resistance to opening calls to women? Where do you think the block comes in the in the process? Those of you that are members of congregations, if you were in fact vacant right now, and your synod bishop gave the call committee the name of a woman as a candidate, what do you think would be the response of your congregation, or how do you think that process would work?
Well, right now we are without a pastor, and just forming up our call committee, and it's been interesting seeing the change in language within the congregation. It's gone from, well, when he comes, to when he or she comes.
That's good.
And now it's just when the new pastor gets here. And so I've talked to different members of the congregation about whether they would be interested in calling a woman. And I think that there has been, it's been my experience that there have been more women opposed to calling a woman than men. And I'm not sure why.
Can we look at that one just a second? The question that women will not be supportive of women in ministry. There are a number of I don't know if we need the blackboard for that, but there are a number of things that are raised about that. One thing that has been very prevalent and that people really don't want to deal with, but it's very much there, is that the usual membership in a congregation, I mean, people that are most active and involved and see the church as their center and so on, are women. And that for 2,000 years there has been a male sex symbol up in the chancel. Many women find that their own husbands don't listen to them, are not available to them, that they are looking for not necessarily genitalial sex, but a sexual interaction with a male who is compassionate, who is relational, who is, I mean, actually by virtue of call, responsible to sit down with them or to work alongside, and somehow this is acceptable if you're working at the church, to have a male counterpart who fulfills a lot of needs. And all of a sudden you have a woman up in the chancel, and they have a great deal of difficulty because we are socially trained as women to be often geared to being centered in our man. And we are geared to go to our father or our brother or our husband. And all of a sudden to have the pastoral image be a woman sort of short circuits this sort of sexual energy and relational sort of association. This is one thing that has come up very often. But then it works the other way too. I had a friend that went to seminary with me who was very little, a very diminutive, small-boned, kind of impish, young-looking person. And the other side of that coin was that a lot of women were fearful about having their husbands working on committees and being at the church late at night and so on with this young, single woman, you see. So we get into some very unspoken, visceral kinds of feelings about this intensely intimate relationship we want to have with this person we call pastor. And I think there's no question about it, and we don't talk about that very openly, but I think it's certainly there. I think it's a dynamic in that whole thing. On the other side of the coin, when I was a parish pastor, I found my greatest strength and support from the women in the church. If I wanted anything, I turned to the women in the church.
Male pastors do that, I think.
Yeah, well, see. And I would find when I would go out and preach, you know, I still find this. I was older when I went in the ministry. I had 3 children. And I remember one time, there have been a number of different occasions, but in one sermon, I remember very clearly sharing an experience that happened to me when I was pregnant with our 3rd child. And this little boy was killed in the street. And I was sharing that incident from the pulpit, and I had numbers of women that came up and said, you know, I never really understood until today that I have all my life heard a male-dominated gospel. And when you were sharing the word with me, I was really there. I mean, I could really feel the baby kicking, and I could really feel the anguish, you know, of these 2 mothers, myself having my son about to be birthed, and this other woman whom I didn't know, watching her son kicking and struggling to die in the middle of the street. And she said that was just a very significant sense for me as a mother, as a woman, forget mother, that I have never quite had from the pulpit. Other women coming up and saying, gee, you know, if you could do that with 3 kids, go through seminary, and get active in the ministry and serve the church like that. You know, I've always wanted to be a medical technician, and I never quite did it, but it just sort of spurs me on. It gives me sort of a sense, you know, that I've done this thing, and I still have all this life in front of me, and there's no reason that I can't tackle something. You know, that kind of feeling from women, that, gee, this is really an inspiration. This is exciting. This is great. I love to see a woman in ministry. So in my personal experience, the understanding that women won't support women has not been true. I have had quite the opposite. I have been invited to LCW conventions and so on, where women have just been extremely interested to sit down and share things that they didn't feel they could share at home with their male pastor. And they felt it was really unusual to have access to a woman clergy because they've just not had that opportunity.
How about the initial breaking in, quote unquote?
Well, as you say, first you got to get the interview.
Yeah.
You got to get through that initial block. 9 times out of 10, and this is why a lot of churches don't want to get a woman's name, because when the woman comes, she's generally quite impressive, quite alive and energized, and she has been socially geared for certain human skills that are by virtue of our background as women in this society, that we bring to ministry. And a lot of councils don't want to see eyeball to eyeball this woman candidate because they're going to find that there just aren't that many reasons to object.
On the other hand, I tell you, I've had an interview and I was sure that call was coming my way and it never came. So, I mean, be careful of our generalizations. I agree totally with what you're saying.
Yeah.
But we need to be careful with that.
Are you talking about the initial entry? We're Methodists. We have a daughter who's a Methodist minister. Just got her elders ordination last week, along with her male cousin who got his at the same time. And she has a brother who's a few years older than the Methodist minister. And in the Methodist system, it's an appointive system. They are appointed by the bishop. And I think this helps the entry situation. She was appointed when she was first ordained as a deacon to a small church. About as big as the one her older brother was appointed to when he first came out. And I think they both have very supportive congregations. I don't think hers is any less supportive. Her lay leader, every time he sees me, tells me something nice about her. And I think the appointments are generally as good initially as the men get. Our daughter's cousin is in the same class that she was. He was appointed to two small rural pastorates, and she was an urban one that's small too. I don't think hers is any inferior to what he got. But I think we know quite a few Methodist women who are in the ministry, and one was appointed as district superintendent at our convention last week, and a relatively young one.
We have the only woman bishop, Methodist Bishop Marjorie Matthews in Wisconsin. It was the first woman bishop to be, and a little short, white-haired, kind of plump little grandma type, you know. I mean, just looks real benign and everything, but she packs a punch.
I remember reading about her election because that was a surprise, and they thought they knew the candidate, and he was over 6 foot, and when she put on the alban that stole it, it hung on the floor.
That's right. How about you?
How long have the Methodists been ordaining women? Do you know?
I don't know how long. There are quite a lot of them, though. We know 6 or 8 women Methodist ministers. We know one husband and wife team that serve several small parishes. I can remember when there was a woman serving as a lay preacher when I was in high school, and that was more than the year before last.
Yeah, my impression is that it goes back really quite a long time, and that together with the appointive system are a couple of factors, I think.
But I think these churches that first get them, had they been asked, might not have been receptive. But by and large, from everything I've been able to hear, and I've heard from most of these congregations are the ones we know, and they've been real pleased.
Yes.
Question: is there some liturgical reason why the Episcopal or the Lutheran Church doesn't do what the Episcopal Church and the others do? They're ordained on graduation from seminary, and they don't have to have a call to become ordained.
Episcopal priests have to find their own parish, basically.
Yeah, but why is that? What's the scoop on that? Just because if they don't have they're not good enough to get a call and they're not good enough to be ordained? I don't understand why that system. Is there a liturgical, biblical reason for that?
You know, all of these things that we're talking about here, I think are going to have to be looked at very closely because the call process in the Lutheran Church really does need to be looked at. Now, in campus ministry, we're on 4-year call, and we come up for renewal, which means they send in a review team to come in and not only look at the campus pastor, but at the ministry generally. And I think this is very helpful. There also, I think, should be built in a certain kind of, even as when you're in a teaching ministry, there should be a sabbatical, I think, for the parish pastor. There should be a lot of these things that we are a little shoddy about. I had a fellow stop me at breakfast today who said, you know, we're stuck. We got a pastor been there for 17 years, and we want that guy out, and there's absolutely nothing we can do.
There is.
Well, no, I mean, yeah, this was what he was saying, you know, to shake the guy loose. They've had the synod in, they've had a committee in, and, you know, the understanding is if you commit adultery or you preach heresy or you embezzle funds, that's about the only way you can draw.
Salary to zero. His or her salary to zero. That does prove the effect.
He did. Mm-hmm. Well, anyway, that's off the topic of women and ordination. Let's get back
I,
on gear.
With a response though, to that in terms of, from what I understand of Lutheran theology and polity, it is to say that ordination does not confer a particular mark upon a person, that the ministry in the Lutheran Church has been intended to be congregationally based, and so that when a person graduates from seminary, that means that he or she has achieved a certain level of academic qualification. It does not mean that that person has been in, yet in a role of pastor. I mean, so that the pastor-parish relationship is very important in the definition of the ministry in the Lutheran Church. So we don't simply stand a bunch of priests and send them out to run around at home to be priests, but not have a priestly place.
Function.
In fact, well, you cannot be ordained until you're only called.
Ordained. I mean,
only by virtue of a particular special call through a synod or a district or something like that.
How about over here?
Yeah, I was going to say in response to your question, it does date back to the whole idea of the authenticating the gifts by the community calling out that gift. I guess there are some exceptions, but normally in the Lutheran Church, you have to serve in a parish before you can go into a specialized ministry. And I don't know,
3 years.
Yours must have been the same. Mm-hmm. You can't be a seminary professor, you can't be a college chaplain, you can't be a hospital chaplain without a parish congregation authenticating the gift of ministry that they see. I was going to say, in response to that, and to say I like the system, except we got a loophole on the other end, and that is when people retire, they don't become unordained.
Yeah.
And I've got a situation in my parish where the guy retired and stayed in town, and he forgot that he retired.
Yeah.
And so he does funerals and weddings and baptisms, and he really should have ended that ordination on that rite. Mm-hmm. So I think there's some validity to the whole idea of ordination going with a call.
Yeah.
Only we ought to cut it off at the other end. When you're without a call, you should be without the ordination.
I think we're just talking about jobs and money. We're just talking about jobs and money. That's all we're talking about.
Have there been any women who have retired from ministry?
I don't know. There have been some that have died. We've lost some people in the struggle here. And getting back to this question, let's get back to you now with your vacancy.
How do we find out what women are available to us?
Where's Ellensburg?
Down the road. So it's your northwest?
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny because there's plenty of them around here.
If you want to.
Just tell them your child if you want.
Talk to your bishop.
Yeah, that's what we're going to have to do.
Just to pick up on that, it seems like I've been kind of critical of our district offices. I'm in the southwest Minnesota of ALC, and I invite anybody to come and look at the track record of our district. I'll tell you, as far as I'm concerned, any issue starts with your bishop. We now have an elected vice president of our district, Karen Bockelman. Unfortunately, I just heard she's going to be leaving us, I think. But we have Barb Knudsen on staff as one of our district ministers. And I really think that on any issue, you need to finally concentrate on that district office first. And what type of support and leadership comes down, and what's being said by those people. And that varies a great deal in the ALC on this issue or any other issue. Mm-hmm.
But also, though, it does block out at the local, I'm doing a spoonerism, I guess, at the local level. I mean, even the bishop's office can recommend, at least in the LCA.
That's why I'm still saying, there's no one who carries the weight of that bishop. No one.
But I was just gonna go on with that and say, you know, I'm in Wisconsin, Upper Michigan, and I think there have been attempts on the part of our Senate office to recommend women, and the local call committee simply has refused to entertain, or they have set it up in such a way that when the woman comes for interview, it is already such an unfriendly atmosphere so you know, at every level, and I think since the level represented here is pretty much laity and congregational base, I don't know how many ordained we have in the midst of us, but I think that's one place we need to focus on where this is jamming. As far as I'm concerned, in 1970, in Minneapolis, at our national LCA convention, by changing just a couple of words, shows you the power of language. Just a couple of words. We initiated a whole new category of potential for service in the church, in the ordained ministry. And the church at that point struck a covenant. And it said, we are instructing our seminaries to receive women candidates to train them. We will examine them and certify them as ready for ministry. Well, women took that invitation seriously. And many of them have put considerable energy and cost, both emotionally and financially and intellectually, and in terms of their own family arrangements, to take seriously what they consider an honest call to ministry. And then when they come out, the church has let down on their end of the covenant. And I think we need to confront the church with a little more directness, that this is not an option. You know, that we're giving you a name, and we're giving you the name of a candidate for your pastor. And if this person is Black, or Native American, or handicapped, or a woman, or whatever, this is a candidate for the pastorate in your congregation, and you are to grant an interview.
Well, I think your remarks bring up another whole issue that the church has really avoided, and that is pastoral competence. And, you know, whatever you judge a pastor's competence to be, how that's dealt with. And the district offices have been very, in our church, at least my reading, they're reluctant to touch that one on a 10-foot pole. The other thing is that the seminaries, and I know the LCA had a study of this, what, 5-6 years ago? Yeah. About the fact that seminaries are, first of all, educational institutions who must have students to survive. And so that there is no, virtually no filter on the intake. And so that they produce pastoral candidates without regard to the needs at the other end of the pipe. And so those two things come online and really impact you know, the situation. So if we could help people in congregations to deal with the issue of confidence, and also I think it needs some imaging from the leadership of the church for us to change some of the way we talk. It is not so much that we need calls for women pastors so that they'll have a place to work or whatever, but we need calls for women pastors because the church needs a greater emphasis on nurturing the ministry. It needs less of the highly competitive individual kind of stuff that I'm into as a 43-year-old male who got in before there was any competency tests.
And you know, there's, we simply need women pastors, and the power of language in terms of the way that congregations and male pastors fight inclusive language. You know, I used to think that was a giver, you know, you could sit with it or not sit with an issue. But if, once you've been hosed down and got real to that issue, you find out how critical that really is, and what gets said, and the whole value that we have in the leadership of the church. While I think sometimes they dismiss their own importance, and we tend to dismiss their own importance, they are the symbol bearers. And when you have symbol bearers who are in administrative positions, it makes a difference.
Which means we also have to be in impacting that level of the church and get more women in as bishops and administrators and so on. I'm just going to put in two things here. One comment that has come back from people, from women who are in ministry, is this kind of stereotyping of the female. That obviously she's going to love the little children, and she's going to want to be a nurturer, and she's going to want to be a mothering figure, you know. A lot of women aren't like that. They don't like kids. Kids make them nervous. They don't want to be telling little Bible stories to the kiddies. They're theologians, and they're trained, and they're sharp, and they want to deal in critical issues and this sort of thing. And they kind of resent that being plugged into that category. Well, naturally, a woman would be this sort of person. Or if we call a woman, then of course she's going to be interested in the Sunday school, because women are mothers, and you know, this sort of thing. And the same is true when we stereotype men, because some men have a very gentle, very nurturing, compassionate side that in our macho kind of imaging of what the man ought to be is then sublimated or not given full expression.
Yeah, but we accept that side of man much more easily.
Then we do an aggressive, high-powered, intellectual leader or administrator, or the fact, you know, some people say, well, women are not good administrators. Well, when you look at a lot of what is done in the world of business and so on, and you see where real crackerjack secretaries and bookkeepers and women entering into law school and medicine and so on and so on, you know, it is not realistic to stereotype about a woman's skill in terms of finances and administration. In other words, the plea being, would you kindly look at the candidate and try honestly to assess the needs of this congregation in relationship to the gifts of this person? You know, when we're going to extend a call, we should first of all look at our ministry and say, what is the predominant need here in terms of this phase of our community? What are the gifts needed here? And then go in search of a candidate that is able to communicate and lead in the direction that you now in this parish. And if that happens to be a woman, super, you know? But too often, we call committees are not honest about their own ministry needs or about the weakness in their own situation. And they're constantly focusing on who they're going to get instead of what it is they have to provide for a ministry context. And I think that's going to be a big one. The other thing I like to comment on is, seems to me, in going way back in the traditions of the Christian community, those churches that come out of a discipleship model, a kind of equalitarian sort of evangelical Pentecostal spirit, have had women active in the ranks since the first century. I mean, women have been healers and preachers and evangelists, and there has not been that kind of, the status has been in the gifts given. In those that have come down out of the more hierarchical apostolic succession, the liturgy, the doctrinal bodies, the more, this sort of thing, there has been tight control by the male hierarchy. The patriarchal system has been a strong controlling. It does not mean that the church has not been served or carried very well by its women, because it's a fallacy to say that women are just entering ministry. I mean, some of you women in this room know that though you're not ordained, you've been in ministry all your life, and you have been a powerful force in the life of the church, in all aspects of the ministry, but you haven't been designated. You haven't been the one trained or set apart. You haven't got the stole on your back in that sense. But you have been ministers. And of course, Luther very strongly emphasized that, the priesthood of all believers, and that it is the baptized that in effect are the ones equipped in the world to be the salt, the leaven, and the light. And that the pastor really should be the facilitator of that ministry. A resource and a facilitator, but the ministry really, the building here is simply the place where the church gathers. And then the church is dispersed and sent out to do the ministry. And so that the pastor really is the servant of the flock, but not the master. There's only one master. And we don't look at ordination in the Lutheran Church as a sacrament. There is nothing that relates to salvation in the matter of my wearing a stole and you not wearing a stole. It's a matter of training. It's a matter of being set apart. I had an interesting, I'll just share this though to illustrate why I think it is important that you have a pastor. I went to Hama, which is now merged and become Trinity, but it was then an LCA. It was a small seminary, very experimental, very exciting, too exciting. The church couldn't tolerate it. We blew them out of the water, and they blew us out of the water back. But there are a lot of Hama grads that are out there that are really stirring up the fermenting the church. So we did something. Anyway, I had come down the hill from the seminary. Jerome was on the faculty up there, and I was a student. I had three kids, and I was the first what they called older woman for the ministry in this program. It used to be older men for the ministry, and then I adjusted that. So I came down off the hill, and we had divisionals. And I was in a deep state of exhaustion and depression. And I was sitting in our kitchen just weeping from the bottom of my soul, being very self-condemning and saying, oh, you idiot, why are you doing all this? This is so absurd. You're never going to get a call anyway. You've put all this energy into this. The church is not welcoming women. There are no women in the Ohio Synod. There's nobody going to give you a call. You have wasted your time. You have misread the movement of the Spirit. You are an ass. You are an idiot. You are no good. You are rotten. You know, why don't you slash your wrists? No, I wasn't quite that. I wasn't quite suicidal, but I was in real despair. And in the midst of all this sobbing, the phone rang. And I picked up. And this guy says, I would like to speak with June Nielsen. So that's me. Well, I'm chairman of the call committee at Fourth Lutheran Church. And we were wondering if you would be available for an interview. Fourth Lutheran Church was two blocks from our house. We were not members there, but the whole seminary faculty in the religion department of Wittenberg all went there, except for us. Well, now, the reason I bring this up, have any of you heard of Granger Westberg? Well, Granger had another plan here. See, he was a member of Forth when he was at Hama on the faculty. He said to the folks there, he said, why call an ordained pastor? You have 15 ordained clergy who are members of this parish. Why don't you set up a new model for ministry? And instead of paying a full-time pastor, take that money and give it to missions or benevolence. And then just set up a rotating base here and utilize the theological training you have right here in the midst. Well, they tried that for 2 years, and it was a disaster. You know, so-and-so had a coronary and was up in intensive care, so the poor secretary starts down the list, you know. Well, I'm sorry, but Dr. So-and-so is in New York on a conference, or, okay, next guy. I'm sorry, but he's in class until 5:30. He's got a weekly seminar, 3 hours. I can't interrupt, you know, right down the list. Well, in the meantime, this poor guy is up there having a coronary in intensive care, and they can't get anybody on the committee here to come up there. The other thing they found was that just because you're ordained, it doesn't mean that people are going to look to you as a pastor. That all these ordained people were sitting in the pews, but their fellow members did not feel the confidence in terms of the confidentiality and the bonding they had with the pastoral office to really go to this other person with any kind of suffering or sharing. So consequently, people were leaving in droves. They wanted a pastor, you know. And when I came, this was a tremendous congregation. It really was. It was great. But when I came, like, people wouldn't sing in the choir because the plaster was falling down in big chunks. You know, you'd be sitting there on Sunday morning, clunk, this big. And nobody seemed to have any kind of invested energy to do it, you know. Nobody was accountable. This isn't my call. You know, I'm not the pastor here. I'm just a member, sort of attitude. So this is what I walked into. And I think it was illustrative. Now, in that particular situation, they were maverick enough, so they thought it was a feather in their cap to call the first woman in the Ohio Synod. They were very proud of that, very excited about it, you see, that they were the first congregation to do this. But this brought up another problem that women in ministry have to deal with. It's getting less than it was. But at that particular point, and I have seen this probably with women who are less mature and seasoned than I am, but young women coming out of seminary who go in as the first woman pastor, who must deal with this whole question of being a novelty, mm-hmm. or being the first in this parish, or the first in this city, or first in town. You have to be very critical of that sense of being special, or different, or unusual. The other thing you have to be very careful is that people patronize you. If you're attractive and young and feminine, that people tend to make excuses for you because you're a woman and you're young and you're the first and you're a pastor and this sort of thing. A very patronizing sort of attitude. Women have to be very careful and aware about that. This whole question, now as I said, I've been ordained for 10 years and it never occurs to me anymore when I go out and supply, and yet the fact of the matter is there's still are many congregations where I'm the first woman that's been in their pulpit, and I don't even think about it anymore.